Welcome to episode 272 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on March 4th, 2022. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. Today, it's time for some cloud news. We dive into recent changes and announcements, including SharePoint file copies, OneDrive known folder move on macOS, cross-region Azure VM restore points, and Azure resource changes in the Azure resource graph. It's another day, Scott. It's hot.
It is.
The stock market is tanking.
It's a day of the week that ends in Y.
And there are subjects going on in the world that we are going to avoid talking about on the podcast because we like technology.
Best not to worry about the stock market.
Yeah, it's just don't look at it is my motto lately. So, what do you want to talk about?
It's been a while. Let's do some news stuff. You want to start with Azure or should we start with your favorite of ye olde? Microsoft 365.
Oh, can I start with my SharePoint one just because I discovered it today and it was kind of an interesting...
All right. Sure. I know how you like your new discoveries.
I do like my new discoveries, although this one was kind of an annoying discovery. So I will have to see, there's got to be a roadmap item for this or a message center item for this out there somewhere because I started seeing it in my tenant, but I haven't seen any articles about it. The copy move UI is changing within SharePoint. So copy move in SharePoint previously slid out like the whole pane from the right side. So you'd select files, a folder, whatever, click on copy to or move to, and like this little pane would slide out from the right side. You'd get to pick a site and then you can kind of drill down through the site and the library and all of that. Now, and this is hit or miss, I've seen it in some client tenants and they had an issue with it. And I have seen it in one of my tenants, but not the other two. And then in one of my tenants, it only shows up for one of my users, even though I have targeted release on for the whole org. But that's beside the point. It'll start showing up in like a modal dialog box in the middle now. So instead of just the little slide out pane coming in from the right, you get the whole modal dialog in the center and you can click through sites. And if you click more sites, it actually pops up like your SharePoint home page-ish screen where you can see like recently visited and following and all of those. So it gives you a little better interface,
gotcha,
in my opinion, to kind of navigate through your sites. What I would love to see that still isn't there is the ability to like search and filter. Like I have 600 sites and because I create them all, I'm following them all and I don't go in and like unfollow them every time I create them. So it is painful for me to find them. Love to see search there, but overall it's getting there. However, the one thing I noticed is this new modal dialog is 100% dependent on you not having deleted or removed or changed the URL of, in any form or fashion, your shared documents library on SharePoint. If that is not there, it gives you an error that says it can't find the default document library and there's no way to navigate to like a different library on the page or drill through your page. You actually have to like go recreate shared documents on the page or on the site, and then it'll all start working. So hopefully Microsoft works that out. And if there's not the default library, it'll still work. I would say that scenario is less and less common, but it does still happen, especially if you have migrated from on-premises to SharePoint Online.
Yeah, so this does have a roadmap ID associated with it. So it's roadmap ID 85567. It was originally supposed to land in October 2021.
We almost hit that.
Yeah, it's now due in early March 2022. So right on track.
Exactly. If it's not on time, just shift the delivery date.
Absolutely. Like that's the way building product goes. You understand delays when you're trying to put something together, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I 100% understand delays. So I do not, while I get impatient, I don't blame Microsoft for delays because inevitably things happen and delays get introduced and bugs get found that need to be fixed.
For anybody who's interested, you can go check out the roadmap. So we'll kind of have an article linked in the show notes about that, as well as the existing support docs, because I think those are important. Like if you don't have this feature available to you yet, there's still all the standard caveats and limitations that come with the existing Move experience.
Yeah.
Like you talked about, like the little panel that flies out on the side.
Yeah. The other nice thing with this, so I noticed this at the same time, is if you look at like the title of your document library where it says documents, you now have a little icon that looks like books stacked up next to each other. And you can click the little icon and flip between all your document libraries on the site. This is completely unrelated to Move or Copy. And this may have even been there for a while, but some nice little features, UI improvements here and there in SharePoint.
Yeah, it's a service that Microsoft continues to invest in.
Absolutely.
Kind of like the Apple TV, right? Like Apple goes like, you know, it's a product area we're still interested in, but there's not a bunch of massive movement there. But you certainly see movement in all the other kind of services that are built on top of SharePoint, like Teams and Viva and all these kind of constructs.
Yep. Unlike the Apple Watch 3 that they continue to promote, but need to just like chop off at the knees because...
Man, you're just surly.
Little punchy today. Anyways, okay, on to that. We won't talk about Apple devices. I lied. So, Scott, do you know how many files are shared outside your organization? Or are you sure that every team in your Microsoft 365 tenant has a valid owner? Guess what? ShareGate's got your back. After helping thousands of customers move to Office 365, they've learned that success in the cloud involves more than just migration. That's why they created ShareGate Apricot, an automated governance platform for Microsoft Teams and Microsoft 365 groups. ShareGate Apricot can help you answer questions like these without planning unnecessary restrictions on your users. With ShareGate Apricot, you get full visibility across each team's lifecycle from creation all the way through to archival. You can automate manual tasks involved in identifying problem areas like inactive or orphan teams. And you can collaborate with team owners on corrective measures to keep your teams tidy and secure. That's also why they've combined ShareGate Desktop, their trusted migration and content management tool, with ShareGate Apricot in a single subscription so that you have everything you need to be successful in the Microsoft cloud.
I think I can find a good segue to get us to talk about Apple devices while we still talk about Microsoft stuff.
Okay, what is your segue?
Why don't we talk about the updates that are coming for the files on demand experience for macOS? Because I know this is probably something that's near and dear to your heart as well.
So files on demand or known folder move?
Yes, both.
Yes, did I miss some of the files on demand stuff? I may have missed that, but I did go turn on known folder move the other day and found all of the files that did not adhere to Microsoft naming standard in my documents. So I will start there. Files on demand, not files on demand, known folder move is now available for macOS. So if you do go in and look up or open up your settings, your properties in the OneDrive client on your Mac, you now have a new tab up at the top that is called Backup. And this will allow you to go in and turn on known folder move for your desktop on macOS and for your documents folders on macOS. So you essentially open it up, click Manage Backup, and then you can pick, like, do you want just documents? Do you want documents and desktop? Do you only want desktop? And it will do a scan. And this is where I found all my bad files. And we can talk about that in a minute. But it'll scan, make sure all the files like adhere to the OneDrive SharePoint naming conventions, and then start backing them up to OneDrive. It does tell you this much content, you're going to have this much left in your OneDrive for business after you're all done backing up. And then it also has like a whole, I think Dropbox has this too, like the save screenshots to OneDrive that's enabled by default. So you get a couple of those features. Where I got tripped up, I had, up until now, all of my GitHub repos, I had cloned to my documents folder. So I did go in and move my GitHub repos out of documents, like up to my root user folder instead of documents, and that alleviated all of my naming issues.
Yeah, you run into the same issue with GitHub repo sync on Dropbox. Like there's some interesting conflicts that come in there. especially with all the kind of hidden folders and directories, and then the Git client trying to maintain everything across that while the file's constantly potentially being changed by like the synchronization engine that picks it up.
Yep. In mine, GitHub will let you start a file name with star. We don't need to get into why I have file names that started with a star character, but I did have...
are you sure? It sounds like you have another problem there.
But I did have files starting with a star character, and that's what the backup was complaining about. It has to do with how I store my notes and where all my notes are stored and all of that.
It wouldn't be a Ben Stejink move experience if it didn't have a bunch of just random crashes and errors along the way.
I am simply doing user testing so I can try to determine what other weird stuff clients may do, and I can be ready to address them.
Gotcha. So I think this functionality is tied to the latest build. So when you talk about known folder move and kind of that folder backup functionality,
yep,
that is in public preview. It's not a GA feature, but it's built into a GA version of the OneDrive client for macOS. So you need to be on version 22.022, which, you know, if you're on like the self-updating release train, you might not actually get through a few more releases, depending on like your update cycle and whichever deployment ring you ultimately like end up in that might be masked from you. But you can always go out and download the latest standalone build directly from the documentation. So you just go out to the OneDrive releases on docs.ms and it's all linked through there and ready to go. It kind of important to note maybe like with the known folder build today that it's only available in the standalone client. You know, if you're not seeing it in your client, just go out and grab the standalone one and push it through that way. And because known folder move is kind of an existing construct that's manageable via group policy thing on Windows and everything on Windows, you do also have controls on the macOS side. If, say, you're like an enterprise admin within your org and you're deploying Macs, you can go ahead and configure KFM from the start. There's a bunch of different plist entries that you can include, like, hey, I want to prompt my users for known folder move when they come up, or I just want to configure opt-in to KFM automatically, so effectively like silent move along the way. There's things like that. And then you can also control those two kind of flavors of desktop or documents and choose if one or the other goes. Like you might want to just sync desktop for your users or sync documents for your users and not desktop, you can totally go ahead and make that happen just with some plist customizations.
Yep. And this is a slow roll. So in the article too, they say it's current, and this was as of February 28th, so 4 days ago from the time we're recording this, it was rolled out to 10% of the insider ring, and it's gradually rolling out to the rest of the insider ring over the next few weeks. So they're definitely slow rolling in.
So that's where I said, like, if you don't want to be on that, waiting for that release train, just go download the standalone, the latest one right now.
So will the standalone work, or is it something behind the scenes as well? Like in, I guess it's only client related, isn't it? There shouldn't be anything that you need to enable in OneDrive.
No.
They're probably trying to eliminate everybody from getting it at once and having a massive influx of data to their data centers.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just data coming in. Like we like it when data comes in.
But how much data can come in before it's too much data?
You'd be surprised. It's a lot.
I probably would be.
We'll leave it at that. You'd be surprised.
All right. There would be some fascinating numbers to see. Complete side topic, like the scale of the cloud and the data and the throughput and the storage and all the things involved in keeping the cloud running and handling all of this data. It'd be fascinating.
Can confirm. It is fascinating. You should come and work for Microsoft and then you and I could have a chat about some of those things.
And then we could go, well, but we could only talk about it together. We still couldn't talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah, but you know, at the end of the day, all you really want to do is talk about it with somebody. You don't need a microphone in front of you.
Yeah, 'tis true. I don't know. Maybe someday, Scott. Maybe when I grow up, I'll come work with you at Microsoft.
When you decide what you're going to do once you're out of your Peter Pan phase, we'll figure all that out.
So I'm no longer a boy living in Neverland. All right, we're getting off topic. More news. What other news do we have? Do you have any Azure news? I don't have any transition. I mean, we could go like from this to Azure storage because let's face it, you like to talk about Azure storage.
Sometimes I like to talk about storage.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
Sometimes there are things that are kind of tangentially related to storage, but not directly. I think there's been a couple of recent announcements that are good if you're in IaaS land to go take a look at. I think lots of us use virtual machines and we potentially leverage things like Azure Backup along the way with those. Like we want to have copies of our disks for our virtual machines and our VM configurations available in something like a backup vault.
Yep.
And ready to be restored on a moment's notice. One of the limitations that's kind of existed there for a little while is you could only restore to the same region that you were backed up in. And now what you can do is you can create restore points on your virtual machines and you can do cross-region restore or CRR with those as well. So VM restore points are a capability that's in preview. They kind of have a little bit of a hierarchy to them, right? There's a VM restore point collection that sits at the top of that hierarchy. And then that, like, that's your VM, right? Yep. Like, I tend to think of it that way. And then underneath that, you have N VM restore points, because you could have one or more restore points for your virtual machine as you've taken kind of multiple snaps of it. And those can be application or crash consistent across disks. So you get a little bit of kind of flexibility there. And then for each VM restore point, you will then have N disk restore points. So basically one disk restore point for each attached disk that's attached to your virtual machine along the way. So that's kind of a cool one, like super easy to get onboarded with. You know, you've got availability through PowerShell to make that happen. You know, everything kind of exists today to get that stood up. Lots of the documentation, at least as far as like the preview goes, is actually calling out directly, like creating your restore points and your collections and things through the REST APIs. You might find that maybe slinging some of that through like PowerShell and invoke web request could be a little bit easier of a thing for you. A little bit weird. Like I think we've seen a couple of these previews lately where things pop out and the way that you manage them is via REST API, which tends to just be kind of a strange thing to me. Right? Yeah. Like we talked about the one a couple weeks ago with like virtual machines.
The VM delete
and
the disk and the NICs.
And VM delete would be enabled by default. But then if you wanted to issue an update to VM delete for like an existing machine, you had to fire off a patch operation on the REST API. And yeah.
Is it
really interesting that we're turning more and more people into web developers along the way?
So I'm wondering, because in theory, CLI and PowerShell is probably still just calling a REST API. Is it that some of these changes are coming out and the PowerShell team, these PowerShell modules, CLI modules, all of that, just aren't keeping up with the features? So instead of like waiting for whoever writes these PowerShell modules to update it, they're like, here it is, here's the REST API. And then eventually the PowerShell module team catches up with it?
A little bit, but that's always been the case. You know, the API surface, as far as ARM goes, has to be there first.
Right.
You can't do anything until the API surface for the resource provider is updated. So like CRP, the compute resource provider, needs to have that functionality in it. And then you can go build out that functionality on top of the CLI, PowerShell,
right,
kind of existing tooling. And the reason it's so weird to me, I think, to see it is the tooling generally kept up, but they tended to be in like an off cadence. Like you would see some new things in the CLI 1 month that weren't in the, weren't in PowerShell yet. And then the next month you would see a new thing in PowerShell that wasn't in the CLI yet. And there tends to be this kind of general back and forth. And then some of this new stuff, it just, it doesn't have coverage for either on day one when it releases. So maybe there is something a little bit like off in the cadence there that, you know, the feature is ready to go within a resource provider, but the client tooling hasn't kept up along the way.
Interesting. Although you see some of the client tooling too, like I start seeing more and more, here's how you call a REST API with PowerShell. And it's like, well, I suppose if I learn how to call all these REST APIs and I can do it with PowerShell and you learn it, there's less of a need for an independent commandlet. I don't know, but it makes it more challenging.
A little bit. I think at the end of the day, yeah, it's more challenging. There's more friction there. And I don't know that that's where anybody wants you to be. I mean, I can give you insights from the way we think about it in storage. We have a, you know, we have the storage resource provider. Yep. And then we have an entire API that's built around blobs, tables, queues, Data Lake Gen 2, like all these things have their own REST API, but that's kind of like our lowest level implementation that we expose to customers. It's definitely not the easy path to onboard to storage to say, hey, Ben, can you go figure out how to fire off a put block list or a put block and a put block list request all on your own and then roll that yourself against our REST API versus saying, go grab our .NET API or .NET SDK, which is same thing as the CLI and PowerShell. It's a wrapper for our underlying API, but it has a set of methods and functions in there where you can just call upload file once. And it's nice and easy. And if it has to split the file into blocks, it automatically knows to call put block for you. And you don't have to worry about that kind of raw implementation on the REST API side of things. You know, we often get questions, even internally, about things like, hey, how do I do this on the REST API? And, you know, sometimes our first response back and the majority of the time the response is, why aren't you using one of our SDKs to do this? Like the SDK will frankly handle a lot of things for you automatically that the REST API doesn't. Whether it's implementation and calling an individual REST API or even things like authentication. Right, like being able to build like a blob client to upload a single blob, when you're doing that with a SAS token, with an account key, with like a user delegated SAS, like those are all very different things to do within the REST API, but they're just a couple lines of code that are consistent across all three authentication methods within the SDKs. There's a little bit of a trade-off there. You got to kind of pick your poison.
Got it. Interesting. So that was a little bit away from VM restore points. But I did want to mention too about that is that it also is not available necessarily in every region yet. They have, looks like they have most of the major regions covered, Central, East 1 and 2, West 1
I
and
said
2.
It was a preview.
It like is a them. Preview. So South Central, North Central, Europe, India, Central 8, India. But if you are looking for this in preview and you don't see it, you may want to go check the documentation and check the region and make sure it's supported. They say other regions will be added in the next couple of weeks, so I'm assuming this will roll out to probably all regions relatively quickly, would be my, is me reading between the lines in this blog post.
All right, you go ahead and read between the lines and we'll see where it falls out.
I will absolutely read between the lines. And insert that it's my speculation.
I'd encourage everybody, like if you're interested in that functionality, like there are blog posts out there about it, but I'll put a link straight to the docs.ms article on that, which goes into kind of the nitty gritty detail of what you need to do to get started with all that.
Perfect. Sounds good.
You want to do another one?
What else?
Another Azure one?
Another Azure one? Do you have another Azure one you want to talk about?
I do.
Which one is this?
Are you familiar with the Azure Resource Graph or ARG?
Somewhat, yes.
So the Azure Resource Graph is a capability where you can go and you can query your resources through like KQL and understand the state of your resources, like kind of current state, current configuration, the way things are going. So if I wanted to discover all of the virtual machines in my environment that are using UltraDisk. I could maybe write some PowerShell on a for loop or do some CLI, things like that. Or I could just go out to the resource graph, which has all this information available and ready to go in it. And one of the things that's been kind of in preview for a little while with the resource graph is the resource changes API. So the resource changes API was an additional extension on the resource graph, which allowed you to go out and query resource history over time. So back to that VM that had UltraDisk, maybe that VM didn't start with UltraDisk. Maybe it started on standard and then I went to premium because I needed more IO for it. And then I figured out Ultra is actually the place I wanted to be. But I want to understand how that resource evolved over time and like what the implementation of those disks looked like. So to do that, you would use the resource changes API. And there were all sorts of, I think, just general like limitations and challenges with that API. It kind of had to go out and do a backend query in real time. It was resource intensive. There were limitations to the number of changes that it could pull back, all those kinds of things. So there's a new public preview that's available for tracking resource configuration changes within the Azure resource graph. So when you do things like you go ahead and change a property on a resource, you maybe want to do detection of when changes happen within an Azure Resource Manager property on a given resource. This is all just kind of baked into ARG now, and it's baked in such a way that the change log is kind of persisted as a set of background data. So rather than having to be a live query and having to go out and enumerate a bunch of stuff and wait for a query to return, maybe timeout, anything like that, now you can just go ahead and fire off queries against the resource graph. And they use this kind of new like at scale piece where they've been ingesting the data over time. So it's all available in effectively the same data source, the same database. So you can query all at once and get all of the details about things that have been deleted, created, or modified over the last 7 days and pull back that information super quick. It's in public preview, but it's on by default. There's no onboarding that's required for it, anything like that. It doesn't cost you any additional money. It's all just there out of the box on day one. So I think that's a pretty kind of powerful tool if you're tracking particularly like change over time and maybe like even churn in an environment. Like I want to understand what's deleted and created over time. If you're tracking that within like a bin of 1 week or less, then you can just use this new functionality.
So it looks like I was reading because instantly it pops into my head as how far back does it go? It looks like this is 7 days that gets retained of changes.
Yes. Like you think about the amount of like churn and change you can have right within an environment. Well, I imagine it's a pretty large amount of large amount of data. You can, now this is just within resource graph itself.
Right.
Nobody's saying you can't retain that information in other places. So if you're doing something like Azure Policy that kind of has its own change history engine,
yep.
If your interest is more in like activity log stuff, because all these same events, so a delete, a create, a modify, anything like that, those are all tracked in the activity log as well. And the activity log can be output or sent to additional places. So you can get a, you know, much longer retention on your data that way. It just potentially means that you won't be able to query for like longer term trends within Azure Resource Graph, but you can absolutely have the data retained in someplace else, say like a log analytics workspace where you can have, you know, that 2 years of data or something like that.
Yeah. If you need to keep long history, long change, because you also have, log analytics or Azure Monitor logs, I think is now what it's referred to or supposed to be referred to because marketing. But yeah, storing that longer term there, this looks like it's just, hey, we want to know what happened in the last few days. Something happened, something changed the last day or two. You could quickly use Resource Graph to pull it up versus longer term change tracking or like you said, that those activity logs and log analytics.
Yeah. And the cool thing is like, you know, you can do cross cluster kind of query functionality too. You know, it could be where you have something in Resource Graph and then you have other information in Log Analytics and you want to kind of join and marry those two data sets together. That's totally possible to do. So if you're interested in this, there's just a table out there in Resource Graph. It's the resource changes table. So you could just do like, hey, resource changes, and then pipe that into a where clause, like where resource group equals, you know, my resource group. And if you want to do like between date time, like, hey, where the change time is between this, you've got tracking for change type, right? Is it a delete? Is it a create? Anything like that. You know, you can graph it out on like a line chart or a time chart over time. Like that's all possible and available.
Yeah. One of the things they brought up with this is like during incident management to understand potentially related changes. Like I can see how this could be really helpful for that. You don't need to make sure anything's on or retained. It's, you know what, something happened last night. We need to find all the changes, mm-hmm. take advantage of this.
Yeah, I think you just have to be mindful of what it is. Like it is specifically changes to Azure resources. So it's going to be changes that are affected through the ARM APIs, through like the management plane.
So that's what I was saying, essentially ARM stuff.
For management.azure.com, like, you know, I could think of something like maybe on like the storage side. You can create containers and storage through the storage resource provider, or you can do it through our REST API. And those go down two different paths because one's going through ARM, the other one's just going through the storage API on the back end.
Got it.
So you kind of have to be mindful of what's tracked by which APIs. But I think for the most part, if you're dealing with things like virtual machines, you're dealing with like creation, spin up, spin down of resources, that all goes through the management plane.
Through this one.
Should be fairly easy to track.
Nice. I did have that question once. I think I was doing an open hack or something. We were looking at Graph Explorer and logs and all the different places different data is tracked, to your point. And I can't remember which two we were looking at, but somebody asked that question. They're like, how do I know where I'm supposed to go query or look for a certain piece of information or a certain change? And it's kind of like, well, you just kind of have to understand, to your point of what you just said, what's getting stored where, or like pipe all of this stuff into something like a Log Analytics where you can query across a whole bunch of tables and logs and all of that in a central spot. But there are different logs tracked in different places.
Yeah, you do have to, there's no getting away from the fact that you need to understand the systems that you're adopting, right? So if you're going to Azure, AWS, or GCP, and you're going to think that you don't need to understand them as like service providers, and you're just going to like be cloudy, that's not going to work very well for you in the grand scheme of things.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. I know one of the things I run into, even when you think you know the source, like I'll pick on storage again, just as an example. Even when you think you know the source, you're like, oh, I created I did something in blobs in storage, or I did something in files, right? Like, help me figure that out and see what's going on there. Like, I want to know when I turned on diagnostics for an Azure storage account for files.
Okay.
And you go, yep. Like, oh, great. That should be easy to query, right? Because we're querying a storage account, and a storage account is a top-level resource in ARM. Like, it's totally a thing that's tracked in ARM. And I've changed a property of it, right? I went in and enabled diagnostic settings for files.
Right.
And, well, no, because blobs, files, tables, and queues are all proxy resources. Like they are resources that live underneath the main storage resource, and Azure Resource Graph doesn't track proxy resources. So yeah, you made that change, but there's no way we can tell you about it because even though you thought it was part of storage, it really wasn't part of the storage resource provider. It was a proxy resource. Like it was something that was handed off as a request from the management plane to kind of like a subset of the resource provider, and it wasn't tracked. Sorry. So there's all sorts of resources out there across everything that are kind of considered these proxy resources, and that makes things even weirder.
Yes, nothing like keeping track of all of that. Not only do you need to keep track of just plain old services, you have all the logging and where stuff is done and all that to keep track of as well. And you thought Indeed. The cloud was going to take away jobs.
No, it keeps us in our jobs.
It keeps us in them. It just changes what we do. All right. Well, that was a good coverage of the news today, Scott. I know you have your regularly scheduled meeting coming up. I have a little bit of work to do and a birthday to celebrate tonight. So we are going to go to a Japanese steakhouse.
Ooh, nice.
I'm excited. It's one of my favorites.
You made sure not to eat for a couple days, right? So you're good and hungry by the time you get there?
Oh, absolutely. I did not eat. Did I eat lunch today? Oh, I ate a decent lunch. But you have to eat just enough, right? Because if you don't eat enough, your stomach like shrinks, so you can't eat as much. So you have to eat enough, expand the stomach out a little bit, but then time it so your metabolism's burned it all off by the time you go sit down and eat again.
Wow, you've really like gamed this all out in your head.
Oh, absolutely.
Kind of like going to a Brazilian steakhouse or something.
Oh, man. Now you're going to make me hungry. Those are good too. I'm going to have to go to another one of those. There's a few of those around, but that has absolutely nothing to do with the cloud. Although maybe they use the cloud.
Maybe. You should ask, like, you know, when you're at the hibachi grill and they're sitting there doing,
right,
you know, all this, the steak and flipping everything right in front of you, if they use the cloud.
I should. I probably won't, but I should. So with that, Scott, go enjoy your weekend.
Well, cool. Thanks, Ben.
All right. Thank you. And we'll talk to you next week.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.